Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Friedberg Mercantile Group conference call. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Albert Friedberg. Please go ahead, Mr. Friedberg.
Good morning. Jamie, you got anything for me?
Absolutely. Let's start off the call with a few of the questions that were emailed in advance. I'll start with one from one of our investors who asked the question, can the fund conceivably go to zero?
Okay. Not a very technical question, but anyway, yes, leveraged funds can go to zero, no question about it, if they're leveraged. And there have been cases, very few. The most prominent one was long-term capital, 1998. That was actually bailed out, but it actually could have gone to zero. It was run by two Nobel Prizes in economics and finance, and it was very highly leveraged. I believe that the leverage at the time was something like 30-1 in what they thought were pretty safe arbitrage or match positions, paired positions, and yet the fund was actually going down to zero, except it was bailed out by the banks. But that is not very, as I say, that's not very common.
Okay. The next question I think probably weighing on most people's mind is, where exactly have these losses been stemming from?
Okay. The position that we have is, or the position that we have are, we are bearish in emerging markets, bearish in a number of countries like, for instance, Brazil, India, some individual stocks, in Russia, Gazprom, and in Australia, some stocks. And we are long, the counterpart of that is we are long in the U.S. We were long and we have been long the U.S. housing home builders, primarily. We also had Bank of Ireland. The ratio of long to short, and I may have to repeat this again a few times, was roughly in the area of 1.5-1, maybe 1.5 to 1, meaning we were short about $1.5 worth of stocks in the emerging markets and foreign markets, and long about $1 worth of stock in the U.S. So that ratio in a market that's rising, you'd expect that unless the long position is more volatile, which it is, happens to be more volatile, you'd expect that to not to hurt you very much, maybe to break even if the long position behaves as it should. It turns out that the narrative behind the market and the story behind the market in the last few weeks has been that the global economy is recovering, that the Fed will be tapering as a result of that, that interest rates will rise, and therefore the consequence of that story is that you want to buy stocks globally, you want to stay away from home builders because as interest rates rise, mortgage rates will go up and it will be difficult for people to buy houses. And so we were hit really on in the stock side by this combination. And in addition to that, we were also long bonds, primarily at the moment for the last few weeks. Now, maybe 85% of our long position in bonds is German Bunds, but they too suffered as a result of this perception of a major recovery and economic recovery. So, our bond position went down. Our emerging markets rallied against us, went up, and our home builders went down. All three major elements went against us, and this is really what happened. Now, for the past few days, it has begun to stabilize. I felt that already it began to stabilize somewhat in the past week, but not all the elements have yet. And as a result, we still are seeing some drawdowns. To be precise, almost to the day, yesterday we did have a change in at least one of the legs. Home builders did better yesterday and they are doing better this morning as the market is beginning to perceive that the rise in interest rates is not fatal to the home building market. So we are beginning to see better results there. But this is where the losses have lied.
Okay. We'll move on to the next question, which came from multiple people. On the last quarterly conference call, you discussed your HIPS position and said that you had reduced it, but you were keeping some of it because the break-evens were attractive. What have you done recently with U.S. Treasuries and U.S. TIPS?
Okay, we have no U.S. Treasuries, nominal Treasury. We have switched over to bonds, and we have reduced a little bit further our TIPS position, even though, you know, we think in the long run that we like it. But short term, we believe that we probably will get a little bit more mileage. I'd say over the next 3-6 months, we'll probably get more mileage out of the German bonds. Break-evens are not only holding, but they actually have gotten a little stronger. Again, this perception that the global economy is turning around and it's going to be bullish for commodities and it's going to be bullish for inflation, and therefore the break-evens have risen. And that has supported somewhat TIPS. They actually have performed a little better than nominal bonds. But in general, we think that bonds will give us a better play. Number one, they're not under the pressure of a central bank, or let's put it this way, they have not benefited from a central bank support operation like the U.S. Treasuries have, and therefore they will not be as affected by a withdrawal of U.S. Support operations, of a central bank support operations. And secondly, they are a better credit at the moment. Sorry to say about that, but the German debt situation and deficit situation are certainly better than the U.S. And they serve as an excellent proxy for any safe haven type of a move. So we think that if anything happens in Europe or anywhere in the world, bonds will be the most sought for piece of paper in the credit area.
Okay, and then another popular position that people have been asking about is gold. You stated in the last call that you were long-term positive, but you are currently out of the market. What's happened with gold in the portfolio?
In the interim, we have established a position. We own approximately a third of what we would like to own. And the market is moving well. It's actually become hard to buy. It is difficult to buy. The market has very little supply. So sentiment has become very one-sided, very, very bearish. And I would think that anybody who wanted to sell has sold this market already. And technically, it's acting very well. It's now doing better than equities, and this was one of our main concerns. Up until maybe 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago, gold was still underperforming the equity markets, particularly the S&P. Since then, gold has begun to outperform, and I think that's an excellent indicator for us, and therefore we have gotten back in. We plan to continue getting back in until we get to our full position, yes.
Okay. You know, just backtracking slightly to the bond position that you just spoke about, one of our investors was asking that whether you were buying cash bonds or futures in order to protect yourself from volatility in the euro.
We're buying futures and cash, and I'll make a comment about that. The futures is not a problem. We have no exposure to the euro, really, except for the profits and losses. But it's minor. The cash position is financed via an offsetting euro liability. So we are long euros and short euros, and therefore we have very little, almost no exposure, except again for the profit and loss. Having said that, we don't really have a strong view of the euro, though we think that. If we were put a gun to our head, it's likely that the euro will do better than the U.S. over the next year, even if there is a breakup in the European zone. And it's a complicated issue, but our view is that probably will do better than the dollar.
Okay. The following questions are more macro focused on your views going forward. You may have touched on some of these subjects already while discussing the current positions, but I want to make sure that everyone's questions get asked. So it seems that we have a sort of springtime in economic data coming from China and from Europe. Merrill Lynch's analysts believe that they're only a short-term event. Could you elaborate about this, and do you share that view?
Yeah, we share Merrill Lynch's view. We think that it's a very short-term event, that there is no prospect. There are no prospects for a global recovery at the moment. I think that the best we can hope for is some kind of a stagnation going forward. It's not impossible that we get another dip in recession in some of the other markets. I think that it's based mainly on the fact that we are operating under very heavy debt in almost all these countries. And fiscal austerity is still on in some ways. And when I say fiscal austerity, I mean increases in taxes. And now, for example, the Japanese are talking about increasing sales taxes by a very substantial amount over the next year or two. So the increase in taxes is not going to allow for a very strong recovery. And finally, money growth, we're getting very little or no traction in money growth. And that, to me, is the principal reason why I don't think that any of these economies will see a sustained economic recovery, at least in the next 6 months or so, and maybe a year.
Okay, now turning towards Europe, which has been a major theme in the fund for some time now. Do you think that the Western European woes will worsen to the point of civil unrest and violence like in Greece or worse? And if so, what should be done to preserve capital?
I don't know. I don't know how it will end. I've been thinking that the most probable end to this thing is for one or two governments in Europe basically make an announcement that they are going to want to restructure their debt. If they do it in the calm conditions, you need not have major social upheaval. Even in Greece, rather surprisingly, we have not had yet enormous or massive resistance to what is happening. But patience is wearing thin. It's been going on for now 5 years. It's a very long period of time for a democracy. And I can't imagine that it can go on much longer without some of these countries deciding that they have to restructure their debt. So what should one do to protect oneself? I don't know. I think that the best thing one can do to protect oneself is to try to make money. But one of the things that I wouldn't want to have any money in European banks. I think that they're potentially at stake. I mean, they can lose their entire capital given their holdings in European debt. And wouldn't want to hold any European bonds. All I can say is stay with some bonds and stay with some gold and have some investments in the global macro fund. I know it's down, but, have some faith. And that's it. I don't know what else to do.
Okay. Just turning a little bit back to home, I know you talked about the U.S. housing market before. But just to touch on exactly what you're thinking there, if you're bearish on the global economy, does it still make sense to be bullish on U.S. housing, even if there is a shortage in housing? Because, after all, these people are still living somewhere at the moment.
No, that's a good question. And the answer is this. U.S. housing should be really the least affected sector in the U.S. and in anywhere else. If U.S. housing does not do well, we are in a depression. And so our bet has been let's bet on that on economic stagnation and contraction around the world, and let's make a small bet that the U.S. at least will survive it, and the one sector that will do the best will be home builders. I say the one sector that will do the best home builders because there is a shortage of housing, prices are going up, mortgage rates at 4.5% or 5 or 6% make very little difference when prices are still rising today at somewhere between 1 and 2% a month, in some places as much as 3% a month. So the rate of interest that's applicable to the purchase of an asset like houses is almost irrelevant today. So if anything, and you can buy on very still you can buy on very favorable terms. So if anything, home builders should do well. And if they don't do well, then nothing will do well.
Okay. Now, turning to the commodity market, you've spoken about a long-term short position in crude oil. Given the move towards self-sufficiency in the U.S., where do you see oil prices going in 2 to 5 years?
Okay, I've said before, we don't make bets, we try not to make bets that are that long term. You know, it happens to be that we do think that long term the price of oil will go lower. But I wouldn't make that bet, if I thought it would take 3 years to happen. Having said that, yes, we think that oil prices are heading lower. Near term, oil prices are being held up by conflicts in the Middle East and potential conflicts in the Middle East. But the increases of supply everywhere, and especially the huge increase in natural gas supplies, is putting pressure on the market, and it's actually forcing at some point crude to go lower. So we are short. We are short via the back months, so that we are somewhat protected from any explosion near term, and we are long a portion of that, a percentage of that short position, we are long in Brent oil, very nearby.
Now, earlier in the call, you mentioned that you had started to put on a gold position again. At what point would there be a supply response to a fall in the price of gold? Meaning, you know, at what cost are producers bearing to produce the gold, and at what point would you see a decline in supply?
Well, we have seen that. We actually have seen that. We have seen a lot of companies abandoning projects in the past few months. And for many, many years, we have been told and we have heard that the marginal cost of production is around $600 an ounce. But mining companies have actually faced up to reality. It's not $600 an ounce because you got to take into account a lot of other things, including environmental policies of governments, the cost of water, the cost of supplies, the cost of energy, exploration costs, and so on. So costs are much, much higher than $600. They're probably $1,200, $1,300, $1,400. In some of the big mining companies have written off almost completely projects that are marginally profitable at $1,400 an ounce. So we are already seeing an impact on production. We are seeing an impact on production.
All right. Well, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank those investors who took the time to email clients or questions in advance. At this point, let's turn it over to those who are waiting to pose a question. I'll also remind everyone that if you'd like to enter the queue to ask a question, press *1 on your phone.
Thank you. So we will now take questions from the telephone lines. If you have a question and are using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before making a selection. Please press *1 at this time if you have a question. There will be a brief pause while participants register, and we thank you for your patience. The first question is from Doran of Toronto. Please go ahead.
Hi. I want to find out more on the currencies as towards the Canadian dollar, short-term, long-term, also considering how you feel about the price of oil longer-term. And maybe the housing market here in Canada. And then I guess to ask maybe more specific, what currency you feel would be, you know, the best if you're holding cash to possibly be in for the next year or two. And then just on the housing, any specific company or companies that you feel would do well to, in the housing.
Okay, let me start with the Canadian. I don't have a position in the Canadian dollar, so that means that I probably don't have that means that I don't have a view. I don't have a strong view, but given our general leanings in the direction of lower commodity prices near term, and especially lower oil prices, the Canadian dollar could be affected, and it's maybe going to be going lower than it is now. So say that we have a likely bearish position on the Canadian dollar, given that outlook on commodity prices. As far as which currency we would hold, you know, I've seen a lot of people in recent weeks touting the U.S. dollar, thinking the U.S. dollar should be bought, and thinking that that should be the best currency. It's not really doing that, and it's sort of surprising to a lot of people. It has appreciated against some of the emerging market currencies, but generally it has lost ground against, for example, the euro. And in recent weeks, it has actually began to lose a little ground against the yen. I don't think that I can come up with a currency that I can be comfortable with for the next 2 or 3 years, like you were asking. Let's say for the next 6 months, I'm probably more comfortable with the euro than I am with the dollar.
Okay. And how about the yen?
And I'm not uncomfortable with the yen. I think that the yen may be as good as the dollar, and maybe better, actually. After having fallen so much, yes. Now, as far as home builders, you know, you have a choice of buying an ETF. You can buy the, for example, the XHB, which is an ETF that agglomerates all the big home builders, or you can buy individual issues like Lennar or Toll or Pulte Homes. They're all good. They're all good. Or KBH. We own all of them.
Okay. Sorry, on the yen, you were you feel that because it's fallen so much that the Japanese won't be going as strong as trying to lower their yen, where a lot of people seem to have like a target of around 110.
Yeah, you know what? There is a limit to how much you can do artificially to bring a currency down. And I think that they have run to the limit of what they can do artificially. The next big drop in the yen would probably be when you get a debt crisis there. When for some reason the market decides, and I don't know why the market hasn't woken up to it. Everybody is, it's a puzzle why the market still thinks that Japan can be solvent when they owe so much money. But the day that the market decides to run away from the JGBs, from the bond position, and put their debt under scrutiny, I think that's when probably the yen will fall again. But that, I don't know when that will be. That's, you know, that may be months away or a year away or years away. I don't know.
Okay. How come the market hasn't recognized that? I mean, it's in front of them and it's been there for a while.
How come the market hasn't recognized what?
Sorry, the debt that they're in, and that they, you know, no one's
no one's doing anything about it. Like, in other words,
you know, Japanese are notorious for being having a home bias. Home bias means that their investors like to own debt and securities in their own country rather than having a bias for buying outside the country, like Latin American countries do. So the home bias is pretty pronounced in Japan, and I would think that the Japanese is not somebody who gets alarmed very quickly. They tend to believe their government, and they tend to have confidence that things will be okay. And so far, they go along with what's happening. The biggest puzzle is, the government has already said and targeted a 2% inflation rate from a deflation of 1%. They've targeted a 2% inflation rate, and yet JGBs trade at a yield of 0.8. Now, that's illogical. That's totally illogical and irrational. Either the market knows better that the government will be unable to get to the 2% inflation rate, or they just believe that the government can do anything. It can have a 2% rate, and it can have a bond trading at 0.75. You know, I don't know. It is a bit of a puzzle, but I do think the Japanese, you have to take into account the Japanese's state of mind. They have a very, very strong home bias, and that's not going to be jolted very quickly.
Thank you. The next question is from Barry in New York City. Please go ahead.
Al, thanks for having the conference call.
Hey, how are you?
I've been buying a lot of shares in this company. I don't know if it's any good. Seabridge. And it seems to be going up a lot. It went up 23% this week. I don't know who owns it, but should I keep buying it?
I don't know if I should be speaking about it. It's not a fund holding. It's a very good gold mining company. It's a junior. It's not a producer. It's a company that has very large reserves. But no, we like it. I can't tell you should buy more. I don't know how much you have and how much risk you want to take.
I've been buying a bunch, and it seems to be going up.
All right. Good.
And thank you very much.
Okay.
It's a pleasure speaking to you.
Same here.
Thank you.
Actually, Albert, may I just ask one more question that just came in from one of our investors? You spoke about European banks earlier and how you would feel uncomfortable holding a large position there. However, you do have quite a large position in the Bank of Ireland. Could you please elaborate on what makes that a different situation?
Yeah, Bank of Ireland is different because it's a bank that went through it went through something very similar to a bankruptcy. It was recapitalized, had written off almost all its bad assets, received a very large amount of capital from private investors and the government. And so it's a bank that has a very clean balance sheet, and it's in a different category. It may be affected by a European banking crisis, and it probably will be affected, but it will not become insolvent from that. It's not like the Spanish banks, like the big Spanish banks or the big Italian banks that are loaded up with bad debt and have not written them off properly, and they're loaded up with sovereign debt. Bank of Ireland is very clean.
Thank you. Once again, do not hesitate to press star 1 at this time if you have a question. The next question is from Janet in Toronto. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for having the conference call. I just wondered what you think about investing in any sector in Israel, and have you considered for the fund investing in Israel, and if so, why, and if so, if not, why not?
By the way, we do have an investment in the asset allocation fund. We have bought some Israeli TIPS, okay, cost of living indexed bonds. So we do own some of those, and we think it's a very good investment there. They're priced well. We have not invested in Israel because even though they have a very interesting technology market, Most of those stocks trade in the U.S., and if we wanted exposure to those, we could buy them in the U.S. So you might say that at some point we have bought some of those stocks, just like we buy stocks, just like we buy maybe Spanish or Japanese or English stocks. If they trade in NASDAQ or they trade in New York, we will look at them. Generally speaking, the fund is restricted from buying stocks, what this is a self-restriction, from buying stocks that are not very liquid. So we want to be able to, and as it is, we have found problems. This market is become very, very, the volume has been very, very low in the recent months. But generally speaking, we try to buy stocks or sell short stocks that can be liquidated within 2 or 3 trading days at the most. And many stocks today on the New York Stock Exchange and on NASDAQ cannot be liquidated in over 2 or 3 days, at least at the size of positions that we want to take or that we take. So a major consideration is not just the macro view of what we think of that country, but it's also the kind of liquidity that's available for us to trade.
Thank you.
Thank you. The first follow-up question is from Doran in Toronto. Please go ahead.
Sorry, I just want to ask on the European banks again. I understand your feeling about them and that they may lose their capital from the bonds and that holders that have bank accounts and that can hold cash with the banks, the European banks, would they be also at risk? Or your general thesis more is that their shares could go to, you know, possibly zero?
The shares can go possibly to zero, and maybe some of their junior debt can be bailed in, like what happened in Cyprus. Depositors, I believe that depositors under the insurance level, and I don't remember now what the insurance level is in Europe. In the U.S., it's, I think, at $250,000. I'm not sure what it is in Europe. But depositors under the limit, I think, will be okay.
Okay, but if they're over the limit,
I would spread it out. I would take away the any of the excess and put it into another bank. If you want to keep it in Europe, you can keep it in Europe, but keep it in another bank under the limit, or try to spread it
outside of a European bank.
No, you can keep it in the European banking system as long as you're keeping it in a government insured deposit, which is deposits are under a certain amount of money.
No, but if your deposits are over that amount, and you know you can't spread like 10 different accounts, especially today where they really scrutinize you for opening up accounts if a person has a $5 million deposit and you know the bonds came up and they're in cash, you know, is he at risk? You know, he's traveling, and is he at risk of actually losing his
money? Well, let me ask you a question. It's obvious that you're not keeping that money in a bank as in a checking account, right? I mean, it's not money that you need for transaction purposes, but it's more like for investment, right?
Right, but sometimes those investments come due, and, you know
so,
you're not...
So you I think you'd be better off, my feeling is you'd be better off buying... very short-term bonds, like if it's like something like $5 million, you're better off buying 1, 2, 3, up to 5-year bonds than keeping the money in a European bank.
Or just put it rather in an outside bank.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And that's really because they hold so much of the European bonds.
The European debt, yeah, European sovereign debt, right?
Okay. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Right.
Thank you. The next question is from Mayor in New York. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for hosting this call. I appreciate it. Just curious on your view as you think about the potential return of a liquidity crisis and high volatility that we experienced at the end of 08 and 09. And as you think about that risk to the market, do you think that's a real risk over the next year or two, or is that something you would consider remote?
No, I think so. I think that we're going to have something similar. And, you know, it's always a little bit different. I think it's always going to be a little bit different. But I am expecting some type of financial tsunami. And, you know, what form it will take, I don't know. You know, I spoke earlier about restructuring, let's say, European debt. It could take a number of forms, right? But if it's done in an orderly fashion, it would have some effect, but maybe not. It wouldn't be that terrible, and you may end up with a very good result, which is you may end up with a Europe that is on much stronger footing. It's like after you go through bankruptcy, you no longer owe any money, or you owe very little money, and now you can move ahead. But it could also be done in a disorderly fashion, and then it could be disastrous, really disastrous. Knowing politicians, they wait till the last moment, and it's not unlikely, I almost bet, that it will be disorderly. So, and that can create a huge problem. That can create a huge problem, especially because governments today, 5 years after 2009, are in a much weaker position. Coming into 2008, 2009, governments had still some room to bail out, let's say, financial institutions. It's very hard for them to do that today. Very, very hard. And so who knows what we're going to see.
And so as we think about investment in our investment in the fund, should we think about the fund as positioned to weather that storm, or as an investment that could profit from that storm through short positions?
I like to think that we can profit from that storm. I like to think that that's what we position ourselves to do, to profit. We're not taking defensive views of what's to come. We're trying to take very aggressive views of what we think will come, and we like to think that we can make a lot of money from that. And we have a number of positions in the fund. I haven't discussed them, but I have written about them, which is we have credit default swaps, thinking on bets on the default of European debt. We have a whole number of positions that can profit substantially from a crisis. That's the way I like to look at it, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Jordan in Toronto. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, Albert.
Good morning.
You just kind of touched on it there at the end of that previous question, but with regard to the credit default swaps. But if we see a you know, call it another haircut in Greece or something like that, I mean, one would expect money to rush into a safe haven asset such as German bonds. So I can quite appreciate that position. And I also appreciate the, you know, the Canadian, or sorry, the U.S. housing thesis on the home builder side. I'm just curious, those other positions that kind of, you know, go unmentioned that are throughout the book, such as the credit default swaps, and I know you'll run some kind of put positions or short future positions on the S&P 500. If we got a massive pullback in U.S. equities, on the note of some kind of crisis in Europe, could you potentially foresee the long U.S. housing positions pull back so hard, more so than the short positions that you've got in the book, such that it kind of offsets any potential profit on the long bond side? Or are there kind of other smaller positions throughout that book that in the event of a crisis you'd expect some sort of kind of explosion from them, which would kind of offset that long U.S. housing side of the trade?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think so. I think that we have positions that, if should there be a real crisis, should make a lot of money and more than offset any of the impact on housing. Credit default swaps is one of them. We have puts on European banks, out of the money puts, but the kinds of puts that that if something happens, they become worth a lot of money. So yes, if something like that, or for instance, we have a bet on the credit of Venezuela, as an example. Well, Venezuela is a country that is on the edge of default, constantly at the edge of default. Whatever money comes in goes out. It probably goes into the pockets of most officials. But things of that sort will, if something really serious were to happen, we should be able to make enough money, more than enough money, to cover any problem in the housing sector. And as I said before, the housing sector itself is only it's in a ratio of 1 to 1.5. So, I mean, we have 1.5 times a short position against it.
Thank you. There are no further questions registered at this time. I would like to return the meeting over to Mr. Friedberg.
I thank everyone. I'm planning to hold some of these on a more frequent basis. Markets are very, very volatile, and it's not simple to arrange these kind of talks, but I will try to give you notice, maybe 2 or 3 day notice, and we'll try to have them on a more frequent basis.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The conference is now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time, and we thank you for your participation.